You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today I'd like to have an important show that is designed to educate both the patient and other physicians who listen about where we are and in the status quo of what it means to be a doctor these days. A lot of people have been talking about what they think it means, and we've had pundits, we've had Congress folks talk about what they think medicine is and the direction that it needs to be going. But the thing that I find that's the standard protocol here, if you want to put it that way, is that people are talking about things they have no idea about. And they're not only talking about it, but they're legislating based on this misconception. Apparently, according to the layperson, it's easy to be a doctor. Anybody can be a doctor. Nurses can be physicians at this point and practice medicine. And it's nothing wrong with that. But I didn't train that way. And I'm old school. And I wanted the listening audience to really get a feel for what it means to be a doctor and really how it's affecting us. I talk about it all the time on the show. But I wanted to have a colleague who is not only talking about it, but actually making a difference and educating people and going to Capitol Hill to discuss with legislators, with patients, exactly where we stand in our community, you know, as physicians and our collegiality. And it's important that we discuss this. So I want to welcome Dr. Kim Jackson to the show today. She has a group called Physicians Working Together. And I think that's the key. We've been divided and conquered. Now it's time for us to take our power back. Thank you, Dr. Jackson, for coming on the show today.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Dr. George, for having me. This is definitely an area I'm extremely passionate about and am definitely relishing the opportunity to speak on the matter and share with your audience and everyone the fact that exactly what you said, that we need to work together. And just like you mentioned, the group that we started, Physicians Working Together, totally is about that. Physicians not only working together among ourselves, mm-hmm. Because we are divided into specialties and outpatient and inpatient and even different regions and, you know, by insurance, whether we're working, you know, direct primary care or working employed, those things divide us, as well as the fact that we have other healthcare colleagues that are working, and we should be working as team members, but sometimes people are kind of, using that old term, not staying in their lane, and it can cause a lot of confusion for the patients. And so we also, of course, are working with our patients so that they can get the healthcare that they need and deserve. And in this day and age, it's just a lot of confusion about one, who's taking care of the patient, mm-hmm. two, how do they get the services that they need, you know, versus, you know, insurance versus non-insurance, and just exactly, you know, the persons that are taking care of them, how do they get to the level where they are to be able to take care of those patients. And so that's one of the things, one of the many things Physicians Working Together wanted to do, and part of that role is educating our patients. And one of the things that we did that we were very excited about last year was just sit down with our patients and have national healthcare town halls. It was before the elections, and we had seven states participate, and we had these town halls, and we just sat down with people and said, hey, what are your questions about healthcare? And mm-hmm. we had everything from, you know, what, you know, the Affordable Care is, to should I get vaccinations to my children, to why does it take so long to see a doctor. But it was really good because they got to see that we really care about them. We care about what we do, and sometimes they don't need to believe the media hype as far as, you know, the greedy doctor, and we don't have time for them, we don't care for them. We really do. It's just a lot of sometimes barriers and a lot of miscommunication and, you know, myths out there about who a physician is and, you know, what things are needed to make sure they get the care that they need.
You know, I'm interested in the tone of that town hall. Initially, before you got your message out, was it pro-doctor? Was it anti-doctor? What was the mood of the people before you started to explain our case?
Oh, goodness gracious. I mean, unfortunately, the mood has been predominantly anti-doctor. It's one of those things of... And unfortunately, you know, I think for a lot of the fault lies at physicians' feet. I mean, we're so busy sometimes making sure that we take care of our immediate concerns, which is nothing wrong with that, whether that's the day-to-day business of our practices or just trying to keep our head above water, you know, whether it's employed or private practice. that sometimes we don't take the time, whether it's to be on Capitol Hill or to interact with people outside of our practices or to educate our future leaders and our future physicians, that the patients don't know all the things that are involved. Mm-hmm. You know, they think if they can't get a medication, that it's something we kept them from. They don't realize the whole insurance or the prior authorization or the fact that they may have, like in our state, Alabama Medicaid may limit how many medicines they can have per month. That's not something the physician created. It's something that, you know, they legislated based on the budget that they have for that state. So initially when you go out there and you start talking to patients, the narrative has been set by everyone except us. I was telling people, you know, I love nurses. The fact that they have a wonderful nurses union and they stand strong and they're standing together is awesome, and we need to basically replicate that. I mean, you can look on any TV channel, and inevitably, some point during the commercial season, you're going to see Johnson & Johnson, we love our nurses, right?
Mm-hmm.
What have you ever seen Johnson & Johnson, we love our doctors? I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of known in, you know, the world that, oh, you know, nurses are loving and caring and healers and things like that. And we need to take the mantle and say, hey, we are as well, and we care for our patients as well. We don't need to let the narrative be set by others that, oh, you know, it's the greedy doctors or those bad stories, those bad apples always be the only stories that are told.
Mm-hmm.
We need to sometimes share, you know, yes, that we sacrifice for what we do. Yes, we put a lot of hours into it. Yes, there's a lot of education and things that we do to be where we are, but we love it, and we're glad we're doing it, and we feel that it's a honor, and we feel that it's a mission, and we're, you know, excited about doing it. And if we're not sharing those stories, and those stories aren't being told. So before we share those stories, then of course we have other people that are sharing the other side of those stories, and unfortunately a lot of times many people will complain before they'll actually share good news. So we have to share that good news.
I think that's an excellent point to make. We've definitely been very passive about it, and it's actually happened very quickly. I mean, I graduated from med school in '98 and opened my practice solo in 2001. And during this last 16 years, I can't believe how fast I don't know how to put it. You've gone from being the forefront of care to being the administrators, to allowing all this backbiting and jealousy. I don't know what you want to say. It's specialists versus primary care, and how the specialists are the problem. And we're all needed. Nobody is superfluous. You can't have a primary care be effective unless they can send to a specialist, and vice versa.
Correct.
You know, we're not an island. And how do we get, in your opinion, do you have any idea how we morphed into this, I'm special, and you took something from me, mentality? We've actually gone down to the social justice warrior level, in my opinion.
And I think, I mean, so one of the things I think that we need to do is definitely build bridges, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find those common ground and things that we have. And for most of us, I would say for the majority of us, that's going to be centered around patient care. At the end of the day, whether you're a specialist or you're in primary care, you want to make sure the patient's getting the care that they deserve. So we start with that common ground, and we can branch out from there. And we all know sometimes there's an intrusion of a lot of mandates and regulations, mm-hmm, and paperwork. And sometimes we start with those common things that we really don't like either. And that kind of gives us some kind of ground that we can actually build on and go from there. And then we also have that common bond, generally, of all of us having completed medical school and did our rigorous training, you know, including residency and our test. And, you know, yeah, you may sit back and say, oh, the good old days or whatever. But we also want to reach out to our, you know, up-and-coming leaders and saying, and our, you know, future physicians and medical students and saying, hey, you need to be aware of what's going on in legislation in Congress now, because that's going to affect how you are able to take care of your patients and your family in future medicine. So I think if we dialogue and we reach out to our colleagues and we find those common ground, we can kind of start to build from there. I know with physicians working together, one of the things I've heard from a lot of colleagues is they're really excited about, for instance, with a Facebook group that has over 6,000 members, that there are people there that get it. There are people that understand their struggles. They feel like they're not alone anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Folks understand that it's, you know, hard sometimes to have the day-to-day trying to keep the practice together or trying to find other ways that they can take care of their patients and their families, and other people that are doing it different ways, or folks that are doing it traditional way and still, you know, able to make it happen. And then just kind of having that brotherhood or sisterhood of, hey, here, I'm here with you. I'm, you know, with PWT. I understand it. I get you. I met you online, you know,
mm-hmm,
and now you're real. So I think just getting to the heart of it and the human of it, you know, human nature of, hey, this is why we started doing what we wanted to do. We wanted to help patients. Let's start with that common ground, and then let's go from there and not let our differences divide us. And most of us discover we have a lot more in common than we have apart, and just, you know, try not to let, whether it's politics or, you know, even if it goes to religion or other socioeconomic things, divide us, and just say, what are the things we have in common? Let's build from those things to try to make this a better situation for our patients as well as for ourselves, because part of the platform of Physician Working Together is for physician wellness. We have, unfortunately, a large number of physician suicides, and it's a lot of physicians that are battling. And, you know, you put burnout in quotation marks because people feel like that's a victim-blaming term. But in order for us to be able to come together and join and be positive and strong, we have to address those issues, too. So I think by just connecting with one another and, you know, like I say, finding that common ground, talking to one another, realizing some of us are hurting, and we're there for you, and we really want to be there for you in a meaningful way and not just superficially, I think we'll be able to build some bridges and break down some of those walls and get back some of that, I call it good old-fashioned kind of doctor's lounge, you know, camaraderie, because some of that's missing in this day and age.
I think so. I mean, it's been, it's everything that, everything you just described are the dividing lines, you know, the solo practice person versus the doctor who's joined a hospital-based practice. And, you know, I don't know if, are you solo, are you private, or do you also work for a hospital setting? What's your practice
that's
like?
That's an excellent question, because I've kind of been a little bit of everything. So I started out first, and I worked for a university, primarily urgent care setting, and then I went and worked for an office as an employee physician in a private practice. And I did call, and I was on call for four hospitals, and as a young mom, realized quickly that did not work for what I was trying to do. Then I went into solo practice as a family medicine doc, and now we've gotten to the point we have a family medicine and a pediatric clinic, and we employ other physicians, nurse practitioners, and we have medical assistants, nursing, and things like that. So kind of went the whole gamut and want to, you know, reach out and help other doctors and let them know you can do it. You can make it happen even in this environment and be successful and, you know, be your own boss and help your colleagues.
Well, the thing that strikes me about what you just said is that you have every allied healthcare professional within your system, and it's it's a collegial working together for the common good of the patient. It's not, you know, it's, I guess, coming out of your lane, so to speak. It sounds like it can be done, but it's your, it's the doctor running it. That's what strikes me. You set it up. It wasn't set up by some outside entity. It didn't, that doesn't understand how we work to best together. Is that a good way to put it?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the funny things is, because some people will see the stance of Peter Ricci, which we say physician-led healthcare, physician, you know, driven healthcare. And the thing is, we're all a part of the team. And we, you know, use the analogy of you have you know, the pilot flying the plane. The stewardess doesn't come and try to fly the plane, but she's very important to it, you know, where you have the marshal on the plane. You know, everybody's important to the role of making sure that they take off timely, they get to their destination safely, but everybody's in their lane. And so even in our clinic, some people will hear what we say, and we say, you know, as far as the nurse practitioners or physician assistants, that they're all a part of the healthcare team, but you have physician-led because of the training and the hours and how, you know, they're different, and we all have our role. And they're like, oh, you know, are y'all anti-NP or anti-? No, we're not anti-anything. We all have a role. And then they'll come and they'll be like, oh, wow, you have, you know, mid-levels or physician extenders or what you want to call in your practice. Like, yeah, absolutely. And they understand their role, and they're beside me, and we are monitoring them, and we are, you know, working with them. And it's a good situation, and everyone knows, you know, what they're supposed to do. And they understand they don't have a problem asking questions and, you know, being, you know, guided, and know, you know, their boundaries. And I think that ends up being a win-win, and even for the patient, so they know who they're seeing, because you have some people, you know, they'll come in like, Dr. this or that, and they'll be like, well, I'm the nurse practitioner, and still no one has a problem with that, because they know who they're seeing. It's not any type of deceptive sometimes scenario. Sometimes that may occur when folks are just kind of generically using the term doctor for everyone, I have a story, and I'll be brief with it, where a colleague's husband said that he went to a military installation, saw a doctor, and she said she was a doctor, and she did some stuff, and he came back, and he was like, "Doc, you know, you saw me last time for my back, and it's still hurting. As a matter of fact, it's worse. You think I can get an MRI?" And she was like, "Oh, I'm not that kind of doctor." And he was like, "Well, what kind of doctor are you?" And she was like, "Oh, I'm like a doctor of physical therapy." And he said he was livid. You know, he went storming out of the place. He's a retired soldier, and he said he talked to the commander, and he was like, "I don't think it's fair that they're calling themselves doctor, and they're wearing long coats. I'm confused. I'm thinking I'm talking to a real doctor, and she's blah, blah, blah."
Hey, Kim, we need to take a break, Kim. Hey, we need to take a break. We're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare. And learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having an important conversation with Dr. Kim Jackson of Physicians Working Together. And before the break, we were talking about the fact that patients are not really in the loop. They are in a position where they're having supposedly doctors take care of them, and they're not well informed of who's giving care. And personally, I think this has been on purpose, because there's been a transfer of healthcare from physicians to least experienced or less experienced and definitely cheaper mid-level providers. And I think that the hospitals, the insurance companies have been in cahoots to try to equate these guys with us so that patients, they're making more money in the back end because they're not paying out as much. And the patients don't know any better. Is that how do you see it in that terms? I think this is a bigger picture, in my opinion.
Yes, I mean, I agree. I think that, I know some of my colleagues would get me if I say in the defense of healthcare administrators or healthcare board members, but somewhat in their defense, sometimes they may not be aware either of the actual difference in training. And to them, you know, say doctor, physician, nurse practitioner, if you have a group that's touting themselves as good as, you have some, you know, documentation that goes out there and say, oh, in basic codes and UTIs and stuff, they're good as. Mm-hmm. But patients don't read the books. And the thing is, someone could come in thinking they have a common cold and it could be something more serious.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, humans aren't that tidy. So if you put them in the case where you're hoping and expecting it's going to be basic, bread and butter cases, but it's something more significant, and they're in the care of someone that may not have the training to actually discern that it needs to have a higher level of care, you still may be putting that person at risk. And so if the patient isn't aware of this, It to me, it not only does them a disservice, it's just disingenuous. You need to actually give them that option so they can be educated and also know that this is their choice.
Exactly.
Now, one thing that they can't be seen by that person, but you need to at least be upfront with them so they know exactly who they're seeing. And at the end of the day, if these healthcare administrators or persons feel like, oh, this person is as good as, or they can offer as good as care, but they're at less cost, I mean, a lot of those persons are just looking at the bottom line, particularly for hospitals. So they're like, hey, this is going to cost less. We think the care is the same. Duh, why wouldn't we want to use this person that we feel is going to save us money? And so we have literally cases of hospitals and places that are letting doctors go, not renewing contracts, or not hiring doctors at all, and they're putting mid-levels in these places. And it truly does seem to be financially driven. And that just kind of gives you a little pause and concern, because at the end of the day, when you look at statistics and numbers, what is the value of a life? You know, and for some people, they just put it in a number value. But what if that value of life, if that's your mom or that's your dad or that's your brother, your sister, or your child, then does it change? And I think that's where the role of going to Capitol Hill and going to Congress and talking to persons and even talking to the public, because they need to know what's going on.
Yeah.
So at least they have the truth, so they have the option, and they can bring it up to the legislators as well and say, at least we have need to have some type of, you know, transparency act or something where mm-hmm. if you're going to have these titles, then patients need to know exactly who's treating them.
Oh, absolutely agree. I mean, this also, it's the opposite. They think they may be saving money, but I can tell you, I've been on the other side of consults that were ridiculous because they didn't have an otoscope, so they're calling to, you know, check the hearing and it's wax. You know, things like that where you have somebody who doesn't have the same training or doesn't have the same attention to detail, let's put it that way. That
right.
costs the system just as much money with crazy consults as it does for delayed consults. And ultimately, are you saving money on the backs of the patient? You know, whose fiduciary responsibility, or who do you have fiduciary responsibility to, your board members or your patients? I think there's a
right.
conflict of interest inherently in that. And I wonder about the doctors on those staff who let that happen and don't speak up. How could you, I mean, is it peer review that comes after them if they speak up? I mean, why would you allow your power to erode like that? No wonder there's such poor, this feeling of why am I existing? Why did I go to medical school? What's my purpose? I'm sure that's part of the reason why people feel so powerless and we're seeing a rise in suicides, no?
Well, I definitely think that's a factor. And when I talk to several physicians, some of them will tell me, they're just like, hey, I just feel like it's a lost cause. I just don't know what I feel like I can do. Like, if I don't feel like not only will Congress not hear me or patients feel like I'm the one at fault, but then I also have my colleagues that would throw me under the bus or won't back me up. And I just say, you know what, you know, it goes back to some, you know, of the wise things they have. All it takes for evil to prevail is for good to do nothing. And,
mm-hmm.
and we have to try, and you can't give up the fight, and you, one person can make a difference. And sometimes it is our allies aren't, sometimes our colleagues, sometimes our allies can be definitely the patients or the administrators or other folks that get it. I have some colleagues that literally told me, I have a, and I don't want to get into too many names because small communities, you get to know people, but I'll just say a local physician that told me she was looking at the stuff that Physicians First Nigga was talking about, and it was all nice and good. She thought it was wonderful. She joined the group, and everything was good. And she said it didn't hit home until her mom had, like, a cardiac complication, and when she went to visit her and see who was taking care of her, she realized, like, almost everyone on her team was a nurse practitioner. That's when she woke up, and she said, oh, my God, my mom has heart problems.
Wow.
And doesn't have a cardiologist. She was like, this is unacceptable. And she's like, Kim, I can tell you I will never sleep on this issue again.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the point is not that we don't feel like they can be a part of the team, but when it gets to the point there's not a physician at all involved,
mm-hmm.
that's a scary situation. I mean, that is not, and I have the nurse practitioners that have been seasoned and trained. And the other thing is the trend that's going on now. And I have, seasoned RNs that have become nurse practitioners. And they'll tell you that the newer nurse practitioners that are coming up, the training is a lot different. They're not, say, finishing school, being a registered nurse, working for years, and then becoming a nurse practitioner. Some of them go in straight through, and they may have, like, 6 months or, and don't quote me, because, of course, all of it varies sometimes, maybe region or their state requirements. But say 6 months of training in, behavioral health and a VA, and then they may be a nurse practitioner and then go be able to hang a shingle and do something solo, depending on the state they're in.
Yeah.
But then there was a trend, someone was saying, of them maybe not even being nurses and just doing some online training or doing a year of online training, getting a doctorate. So my thing is, you know what? The patient has the choice to choose whatever they want. But they need to have also the knowledge of that person's training. Because I know for us, we know the difference. I know the general difference, and what we want, per se, a pediatric nurse practitioner that had no pediatric training but just got a degree and hung up a shingle and said, I'm going to be a pediatric nurse practitioner seeing our children, or we want a pediatrician, or we want at least a pediatrician working with a pediatric nurse practitioner that actually had pediatric training. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I think if they have the truth of the matter and know exactly what they're getting, it will bring a lot of light to the situation, because that's a scary situation when someone just did some things online and got a training, and now they're a doctor, in quotation marks, and people don't even really know what their level of training is.
Well, isn't there some sort of standardization in this training? We know if you go to medical school, it's 4 years of medical school, 1 year or 2 years of internship. It's so-and-so. You know exactly how long it takes to train to be an internist, a family practice, dermatologist, ENT. There is some standardization. From what you're telling me, anybody can do anything they want and then have the power to get out there and see patients without any training, honestly. It's just maybe you learn the same thing. I don't even know. Do they do anatomy? Do they do anything that we've had to do in medical school?
Definitely the training's different. So physician assistants, from what I understand, definitely have training similar to a physician. They may have the rotations of anatomy, things like that. Mm-hmm. But nurse practitioners, of course, are trained along the lines of nursing. So that training won't be, per se, similar to a physician. So there's definitely some differences there. And it's funny, when you do talk to some of the nurse practitioners that have been seasoned and doing this for a while, mm-hmm. they'll tell you, like, they're mortified. They don't even want to think of the idea of trying to hang up a shingle and do something by themselves because they realize they know what they don't know.
Right.
And, you know, when I guess you have a different kind of training coming along, thinking, you know, you're as good as doing shortcuts and not
exactly.
doing all of the training that's necessary, then if you have that mentality and you're taught that way and you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes you just don't realize the fact that, wow, this person's life is in your hand and you haven't realized that that person can die sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a little naiveness as well as, you know, I'm not going to say maturity because not to say someone's immature, but just you just really just don't know. And I think when it's better education and people are aware of their shortcomings and the fact of, hey, really, medicine, even for all of us, realizes so much to learn.
It's a practice.
And it's so many things that can go wrong. And
yep.
you want to just do the best you can and you want to learn as much as you can. You don't want to be in those situations where you can really harm somebody. So you're not trying to take shortcuts to taking care of people's lives.
You know, I'm seeing a trend here then. This whole algorithm-driven healthcare, the Watson, IBM, you know, taking charge on what treatment options are. To me, that's a crutch and training wheels, and it allows people who may not know much, as much as you or I do, or any other physician, to open up their iPad and get the answer or the shortcut
right.
based on what the diagnosis potentially is. That's ridiculous. Medicine doesn't work that way. How many
right.
times have you thought, oh, I got this, and it's something completely different, once you go through all of the steps of examining the patient, taking the history? I don't see that happening very much anymore. It's like it's just jumping to the end and the prescription most of the time.
Right, exactly. Cookie cutter medicine.
Exactly.
Doing a lot of tests, doing a lot of prescriptions, and I think even that's what, you know, one of the things even with physicians working together wanted to do is like, hey, you have your colleagues almost like those curbside consults,
mm-hmm.
because just because you think, you know, you hear hoofbeats and we say, oh, think horses, well, sometimes it could be a zebra. So you need that foundation to even get to that thought process.
Absolutely.
If you have a person sometimes that had had, say, anatomy and physiology, or some of those basic pharmacology things, even to start that process is difficult. And it still goes back to you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just a scary thing when you think about if you or I say you want to do family medicine, internal medicine, just decide, oh, I want to be a cardiologist or nephrologist or dermatologist. Oh, I'll just go do, you know, 6 weeks of rotation and then I'll just do that. And we're like, you know, God forbid, there's no way we could do that. We'd have to do a total separate residency.
Exactly.
We're talking about years. But we'll have folks that do a basic rotation, maybe general studies or medicine, and then, you know, rotate, say, GI or cardiology. And they're like, okay, cool, now that's what I'm doing. And you're like, wow. And it does. It behooves our colleagues, too, to also hold a standard, because I have some, you know, we just like with anything, whether it's electrician, teachers, lawyers, dentists, you know, whatever, you have ones that are wonderful and ones that are subpar. And just like that, you'll have physicians that do excellent work and have, you know, mid-levels, and physician extenders that do excellent work as well, that have been taught, that have learned, do great work side by side with the physician they're working with, know their limits, and, you know, ask questions when they need to. And by all means, we think that's, you know, the perfect or better system. It's for the ones that either don't want to, you know, have the limitations or aren't aware that they need them, that we're concerned. And just the fact that the patients don't know is a concerning issue as well.
I would also think that it's where you're practicing also must be a concern. If it's rural, if it's an underserved area, these are the people who are the most vulnerable on so many levels, who I think and I've seen have a lot of mid-level providers because they don't have any doctors, or it's telemedicine, or it's something remote. You know, we're talking about a multi-tiered system. Depends on who you are, where you are, how much money you have, and that's not the way the healthcare system is designed to work. And I want to get your opinion on that, but let's take a break first. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking with Dr. Kim Jackson. And before the break, we were talking about the fact that there's a multi-tiered medical system that's come online, and it's not equal. If you are living in a rural area, if you're living in an area with low economic means, are you getting the same care as somebody who can pay out of pocket or somebody who has Cadillac insurance in a big city? I don't think that's the case anymore. And the argument now is healthcare is a right. That seems to be coming, one of the things I'm hearing, and even the AMA is apparently debating that. Have you heard that?
Yes.
And I think that that's a tragedy because it's not a right. It's a service and it's a calling. And what happens if it becomes a right, in your opinion? Are we doomed to having this type of system, you know, become even more potent, more powerful?
I mean, probably so. It's just so many nuances to the healthcare delivery system, particularly in the United States, which so many, like say, different parts of socioeconomic, and then we had the addition, like you said, mid-levels, right? And people thought that, oh, they're going to come in and they're going to ease the rural physician shortage and all this kind of stuff, and then realize that didn't happen because a lot of them realized very quickly that maybe that's not where they wanted to live, if it was, you know, just as far as their kids or schools or different things like that, or, you know, just the quality of life they wanted to be. And so they went to the suburban and urban areas as well. And then it gets to the whole thing of, well, yeah, if you have some type of centralized medicine or socialized medicine, some people will say, well, fine, if you're going to have paid for all the doctor's training and education and things like that, then sure, then you can kind of maybe dictate this, but that's not the system that we have. Mm-hmm. The system that we have, basically, you know, the democratic system is where people come and you pay for your own schooling unless you have a loan or you have some type of scholarship. And then you have doctors that have various amounts of debt, from some that may, you know, owe nothing to a few thousand, to some that are $300,000-$400,000 in debt. And then, of course, they're choosing various fields to go into, depending on what type of lifestyle they want. And then you're looking at their reimbursement. So it's just so many layers to healthcare and, you know, the reimbursement and providing care and where you are. And it just gets to be so complex, even for physicians, much less the patients. And you start using words like, you know, like you say, is it a right? Is it a service? And just trying to get to the basic of it. And I think at the end of the day, if we can speak to the average person and just kind of say, you know, people use the analogy of, say, you know, your food, your water, your services, and folks that are taking care of themselves and folks that are not, you know, what are the consequences of those things?
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes you can make some leeway on that, and you try, and I try to particularly have my opinion separate from, like, what Physicians Working Together is for, because our group itself is nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a huge issue. I can just say that it is a huge issue that we have to address and be aware of the consequences of both. And it's just, I guess it still remains to be seen, because we can see even now what Congress trying to debate, ACA versus AHCA, and
right.
whatever they're doing in these backroom dealings.
Nothing's changing.
And just seeing how it's going to affect everyone.
Listen,
what exactly is going to come out. So
I think it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be Obamacare light, and the taxes are still going to, I mean, my personal opinion, taxes are still going to be in place. And they're going to subsidize the insurance companies to do the same thing they've been doing, which is robbing the patient and the doctor. But that's my personal opinion. And I think we can sit here and wait for them to help us, which is not going to happen. We've and I have both been up on Capitol Hill. I've been told, and maybe you've been told too, but I've been told, never complain about your quality of life as a physician. That'll make it worse. They love that. They want to make your life miserable. They don't like you, is what I was told as a physician. So if you're going to say anything, it's got to be about patient care. But patient, I can't give care to patient if I'm under duress, right?
Right, exactly.
But they don't care. That to them is a win. That's the mindset that we have to understand as physicians, that they think that we are the enemy, that they want to control us. They don't like us. Maybe they're even jealous of us. I'm not sure. But we've fallen into the trap. We have to take ourselves out of it. And I love your organization, because part of that is finding your value again.
Right.
You're not like I am. I'm not like you are. We both do wonderful work for our patients, but we're different. And that's what makes it so powerful. You're finding a doctor that works, that fits you as a patient. If you have an automaton who's just there to pull a plug or write a prescription and not even look at you but type on a screen, is that what you really want? Because I can tell you, if you keep going down this path as a patient, you're going to get that and more, and you're not going to like it.
Right, exactly, exactly. And you are so right, and I'm so glad you get that from the gist of what physicians working together is about. It's not about, oh, we're better than other people or we're higher than them, but it also means that we do have value, and we're not at the bottom either.
No.
It's not like we're just going to be, you know, these little peons and some little worker bots, that no, we have value, and we realize we have value, and we realize the patient is the center of the relationship, and we have a huge role. We want to have, like we said before, the physician-led healthcare team, where we're making sure that they get the services that they need. But in order for them to get those services, we have to have the tools, and we can't be under duress and be pulled in all these multiple directions, particularly that don't help patient care. It's just someone justifies her job, all these administrators and stuff that keep rising and rising and rising. You keep creating all this legislation to be barriers to us giving health care, and then you give someone to be able to legislate and administrate the legislation administrating that you just created. So it's like, what is going on? And so, like you said, at the end of the day, it's about patient care and letting the patients know you have a voice and you can speak up for yourself. And I think as we continue to educate the patients, can you educate our colleagues, you're not alone, you do have a voice, there's an option for you to speak up, and we're much stronger together than we are apart. Let's find those common goals. Let's, you know, go to Capitol Hill. Let's talk to each other. Let's trust each other. Let's have these healthcare town halls. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Let's get this word out and let people know there are doctors out here that care and that are doing things and are trying to spread the word and say, hey, you guys, let's work together. Let's get this message out to the community. Let's let patients know that we care about them, and we can make a difference.
Well, from your standpoint, and I'm curious because my practice is kind of unique. It's kind of a hybrid of self-pay, insurance. I don't do Medicaid or Medicare anymore because it just totally sapped me. But I barter. I do a lot of the other things to get patients in and help them pay for it. What, have you seen the patients, and I'm sure they're out there, who think that you really are they're there in your office, mind you, but they think that you owe them in some way, that you're the enemy, that you're trying to bankrupt them. I mean, they've bought in the hook, line, and sinker line of the doctor being the enemy and just wanting to make money. How do you deal with those patients? I'm just curious. I don't have them, and if I do, they're not in my practice very long. But how do you, what do you say? What is that? I know how it makes you feel, I can imagine. But what do you say to the patients?
Well, the funny thing is, well, I'll say the funny thing and the blessed thing. I'm like yourself. I guess with the fact of being in private practice and having the blessed ability to kind of have a selection in a sense. You know, of course, we're open. We don't discriminate. We do take Medicaid and Medicare. We do take, you know, self-pay and, you know, those with the various insurances. And we are in a rural area, somewhat suburban. And, you know, we've been blessed particularly to be in South Alabama, South Georgia, to give our patients from both areas. they are still appreciative of our services, and they still kind of view physicians on kind of a, you know, higher level than some other regions of the country, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And so I still get the little goodies and the pictures and, you know, meat and cakes baked and pies and, you know, various things like that. So I don't really get a lot of the, you know, you're here to serve me and you're trying to make a lot of money off me. Mm-hmm. The funny thing, though, I did do my training in Mississippi. We do some home visits, and I did have one lady come in, something like, I just know y'all want to use my, like, Medicaid gold card. And I'm like, what? So it was funny, because in her mind, she felt like people were trying to see her and do certain things so they could use her insurance money. And I had to kindly educate her. First of all, there's no gold card with Medicaid. And definitely, they were not trying to use up all her visits or get all her money, which she wasn't really paying anything anyway. I think the visit that time was 50 cents per visit or whatever.
Okay.
So, you know, the way I dealt with it in that situation was to kind of, you know, patiently explain the need for the services, the fact that there was no money, no huge profit being made from that, and essentially, basically, that was a service offered by the state taxpayers in order for her to be able to get the services that she needed. It wasn't that the, you know, hospital I was working for was making some huge profit from her, you know, to do that. I mean, I would imagine that how folks had to deal with that, that would be one of the things they'd have to do, just kind of take the time and try to educate them.
Mm-hmm.
And let them know that it's not that way anymore. I don't know if it ever was that way, but I know particularly for us with managed care, and I do use the analogy of, it seems to be the healthcare industry, particularly physicians, the only place you can kind of get up to the register, and it may be $200, and you just say, nah, I'll give you $50. And you walk out, pay $50, and don't go to jail, because you definitely couldn't do that at Walgreens or Walmart or Kmart.
No.
Just be like, you know, well, Kmart's out of business now, but you know what I'm saying, Target.
I do.
I'm just going to not pay you for what I just put on the, you know, register to buy. So it's just a whole, like you say, different mentality. And unfortunately, I think some of we've allowed, some of course, the insurance have pushed, and, you know, with the media, and we just have to kind of take that role back and educate the patient population that we are worthy of the services that we provide, and what is your health and what is your life worth to you? And sometimes just that simple declaration of what is your health and your life worth to you,
mm-hmm.
For some people is sobering. So it helps.
Yeah, truth is an amazing, amazing thing. It cuts through a lot of BS, and
right.
It cuts through delusion. And, you know, dealing with people as human beings as opposed to their insurance number. Or
Exactly.
That's what it comes down to. And it's hard for the patients sometimes, because they have this mentality sometimes that I have insurance and it should be covered. And why isn't it covered?
Right. Exactly. They sign up for stuff and they haven't read any mm-hmm. of the fine print. They don't know the difference between, say, a copay or a deductible or co-insurance, and they expect you to know. And it's funny, because it's like, okay, I have thousands of patients, I should know yours, but you have your one self, but you don't know. And you're mad at us if your labs weren't covered or your meds aren't covered, but you didn't read your plan. You just paid attention if, you know, it was $50 per month versus $500 a month, you know, and of course I'm with the lease one, but I didn't realize it wasn't going to cover anything.
Exactly.
And I feel their pain, and I'll tell them, I feel their pain, particularly having some plans that have these ridiculous deductibles that, honestly, if they pay it out of pocket for the whole year for us, they never get to that deductible.
No.
And that's a very frustrating thing, and one of the things we're trying to work with them to have change, because it's that is ridiculous. So.
For those patients who... Well, actually, let me ask you this. Did you hear that Blue Cross Anthem, I think it's Georgia, is going to now decide whether or not they're going to cover an emergency room visit based on their criteria for what they believe to be an emergency, right? So if you come in with chest pain and it's actually heartburn, they're not going to pay for it. Or they'll just decide not to pay, based on the diagnosis, not the doctor's note. Can you believe that?
I know. It is... You're like in some type of twilight zone. You're like, how did we get here? So you see this stuff kind of coming up, and you're like, it like never passed. Like, how can they do this? And then you realize they have these monopolies,
mm-hmm.
And you're just kind of sitting in awe, and you're like, okay, how do we get here? And now that we're here, how do we fix this? And I mean, I think definitely for things like that, yes, we can be in our medical association groups and our different groups by PWT and our other groups and talk about our own shows and things like that. But at that time, we really have to educate and mobilize the public because I think a lot of times they don't realize the power that they have.
Agreed.
And particularly with social media, to do those things like write those letters, blast it on social media, let people know that, okay, you're paying these premiums, you're doing all this stuff, but you have some person that's sitting behind a desk and say, okay, yay, nay, oh, won't cover that, will cover that, won't cover that, that has no scientific basis in the sense of the person that actually saw them.
Let's take a break.
And make a determination. And nope, you just decide you're not.
Let's take a break on that note. It's sick, I know. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call. And I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare. And learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we're speaking again with Dr. Kim Jackson of Physicians Working Together. And, you know, this is an important conversation because it's really the genesis. If we can all, as patients and doctors, get on this page of taking the forefront. We've had insurance companies that we just discussed. Now they're practicing medicine literally. So they're going to decide whether your ER visit is covered. How do they know? And then you're going to have to call them at some points in order to get approval to go to the ER based on your symptom. So if I have a sore throat, it turns out to be a paratonsillar abscess that ruptures. I mean, who's on the hook for that? Is it going to be the doctor because I told you to go, but your insurance won't cover it? There's all sorts of things that could potentially have a bad outcome. And I think the most important thing is we are the forefront, the doctors and the patients, and you've taken the lead now in educating patients with your town halls, which I find really intriguing. So are you having more of them? Or is this going to become a yearly thing? I'd love for this to be nationwide.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we are super excited about it. And we do plan to have more. As a matter of fact, a couple of PWT members were really the brain behind that. Dr. Mary Mass and Dr. Mark Lepatin basically helped us get the framework for that. And mm-hmm. we're super excited that other physicians took it on board and set it up in their local areas. There was Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, Texas, I want to say North Carolina, California. We want to have more states. We had Chicago interested in it and a couple of other states, Arizona. And the plan we're thinking about now is we'll probably have it maybe like a every couple of years kind of thing, kind of associated with the elections. So probably 2018 because we think that's a really good time when people are really interested.
Right.
And it also gives docs, because docs are generally very busy. Time to kind of really set it up and have it in place and tweak the things that we, you know, are able to discuss. And in the interim, one of the things we want to do as we start into the fall for this year is really kind of kick up our mentoring as well as our career day outlook and options outreach mm-hmm. for our middle schoolers as well as the mentoring for our medical school students. So we got some things in the works for that. And it's a couple of things. I'll talk about that briefly. A couple of things with that. For one, the middle schoolers and elementary students, is we talked to different schools with half career days and kind of set up a arrangement with Physicians Working Together members to go to the schools and talk about being a physician. One, you have all these members of the healthcare team and it's so confusing. You got the PAs, the NPs, the MA, the CNA, the whatever. This is a great opportunity to go out to the local schools and say, hey, I'm a physician, also known as a doctor, but this is the type of doctor I am, and this is how you become that. So mm-hmm. then when they're talking to other people to say, oh, I'm a doctor, but I just did it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? There's a doctor who came to my school. They were family medicine, internal medicine. This is what they said.
Mm-hmm.
So it has this two-prong approach, right? So you're educating the youngsters. You're giving them opportunity to know that this is a career that we enjoy, that we love, that's out there. We're kind of already starting with the whole thing of there's going to be a physician shortage, so getting them still interested in it. You know, and I think it's just a good thing for the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is for the medical students and, you know, even the residents if they have time, the mentoring. So they'll kind of know, hey, there's some changes coming up in healthcare because there are a lot of doctors older than ourselves that are just kind of like throwing in the towel and done.
Yeah.
But if they kind of maybe would have gave us a little heads up of what was coming, maybe we could have been a little more prepared or a little more active, even though now we're trying to, you know, change things and it's a little hard for some things that have been in place already,
mm-hmm.
are kind of being aware of some changes that were coming, so we kind of work toward it. So that's a couple of things we have that we're going to do in the interim while we get ready for maybe the next healthcare town hall. But essentially, we do plan to do it again. We are hoping to get it definitely even more states. We're super excited the first time we did it. We were like, oh, if we say 50 states and had more than 5 states, we did more than 10% of the country. So we were super psyched about that. And just physicians taking with their own time. And we had it in places like libraries, in the mall. One of the radiologists had it in the parking lot of his building. Other folks had it in convention centers. So, and then the ones that are still pending were, you know, we're still talking to them and giving them, like, the questions they can ask. And some videoed it, some, you know, just kind of had it out there. But the response we got for them was wonderful. And it, for a lot of people, didn't take a lot of effort. For mm-hmm. some others, like, we had one here, and we ended up bringing in some instructors. So they had a Zumba part of it and then another Shabam part. So we had, like, some prizes.
Mm-hmm.
And had folks doing exercise training. So it was really good and really nice. But we just felt like it would probably be more effective to kind of have it associated with probably the election. So, like I said, we're thinking probably biannually. And the other thing we thought, too, with so much going on with ACA, AHCA, and not really knowing where it was going to go,
mm-hmm.
It might be good not to have it for 2017.
Right.
And just kind of see where we are. Hopefully 2018 we'll hopefully have maybe some better answers about, because that was definitely a lot of the questions that we got last year. You know, just what is it, and, you know, how do you get it, and how do you get resources. And so, obviously, as physicians, we don't have a problem saying, you know, I don't have the answer, but I'll try to get that for you, or mm-hmm. let me direct you somewhere. But we definitely want to be in a better position to have as many of the answers as possible. But it was really cool, and we're excited about being able to continue that and take it to some other places and hopefully have it, like you say, be nationwide.
Well, I love it. It's very comprehensive. You're talking about the people, the children, who will be the future doctors. You're talking about doctors in training. Everybody, you've got to do a grassroots approach to it. And from the inside out, instead of someone who doesn't know, this is someone, people who know what it took to get here, what it's really like, how do we fix it? None of us have, you know, what's broken about it, but in a positive way. You know,
right,
exactly. There's enough negativity out there. I'm a big fan of, you know, if you're not happy with something, you need to change it. Stop doing it. You withdraw your consent from it. Find another way around it, but not give up.
Exactly.
And I think that's, if we can all get that message to our colleagues who are beaten down and given, you know, they're just getting through it, I don't think they can see that, hey, there's another way around this. Maybe you need to leave the hospital staff. Maybe you need to join with an old friend and open up your own practice or do consults, you know, online. Whatever it is that you find is your niche, there's so many ways to play the game now instead of just take it.
Right, exactly, and then be miserable and make everyone around you miserable,
mm-hmm.
and then definitely not do, you know, the ultimate you know, awful thing, which is to take your life. And we definitely want a part of what we do, physician wellness, and just the fact that we're letting people know there's an outlet, there are people that care for you. And part of the mission of physicians working together is we're not reinventing the wheel. There are persons like yourself that have radio shows. There's persons that have physician wellness groups and stuff. PWD isn't trying to start all those things over. We're trying to say, hey, guess what? There are a lot of us that are already doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know what you're doing and let us spread the word. We want to have with our website that anyone's welcome to join, www.thepwt.org. That's for physicians and patients, because we plan to have, you know, a site for physicians, for patients to get information, site for physicians if they want to look and see maybe what's out there as far as employment, what's out there as far as different things that other physicians are doing,
mm-hmm.
what's out there as far as legislation. All this stuff is in the works because we're so busy, it's hard to go to multiple sites.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to basically say, hey, these are things that are already being done. You may not have to redo stuff or come up with something new. See what your colleagues are doing. See what's being done out there and see if you can actually join their efforts or if this is something you can kind of at least read up on and know what's going on. And I think that's, you know, something that's missing that we can offer, because right now you may have the pediatric have their journal, the neurologists have their journal, family medicine have their journal.
Right.
But where's the one site, you know, that you can kind of get all of that? And no, we're not trying to, someone say, be the new AMA. I mean, the thing is, the AMA has their role. They're doing what they do. A lot of us are not happy with a lot that they do. But, you know, that's our thing. Let them do their thing, and we're going to do what we need to do, because a part of that is we really need a more social media presence. We really need to change this dynamic and this overall view of physicians.
Right.
One of the things we came out with, even with National Physicians Week, we just had Doctors Day. One day for doctors. We have a week for cat and dogs. I mean, you know, and we were like, hey, that needs to change. Part of that is showing our importance in the community, just like we have National Nurses Week. And so we got officially recognized for National Physicians Week just this past December by the National Day calendar. And we're hoping, you know, at some point we'll take that to Congress. And we took from March 25th and made it the whole week. So it ended up being, from March 30th, which is traditionally National Doctors Day.
Mm-hmm.
I made it the whole week from March 25th to the 31st. And just doing things like that to show doctors that we appreciate you as a colleague, but we, you know, the patients appreciate you too, and we understand it's the hard work and sacrifice that goes into it, but we love what we do, and we're honored to be able to take care of patients and do this day by day. And we want to leave a good legacy so we can be able to help the future doctors be able to continue to take care of their patients. So
absolutely.
And a lot of work, but rewarding.
Well, when you were up there on Capitol Hill, were you able to see your Congress folks or get the word out through the, you know, through the Congress system? Or is it something that you're planning on doing?
For me personally, planning on doing, but for some of our members, definitely. They were able to get with their congresspersons and not only take pictures, but give information out, let them know some of our goals and plans and some of the issues where we stood. We've been actively, you know, whether it's writing letters, tweeting, sharing posts, propositions, articles, and just various different ways to try to get the information to them in different places. And we have ones now that when they're meeting, they'll contact us and they'll say, like, hey, I'm meeting with so-and-so. Is there something you want us to get to them? And we'll try to take maybe the most top three items that we're, you know, is hot among the members. And you'll probably see that in the group, because the next thing we want to think about too is start reaching out to members and saying, hey, what's on you guys' mind as far as what you really want to see us address next? And try to make sure we can take that message to, you know, the powers that be, so we can continue to speak up for the members at large and make sure our voices are heard.
That's awesome. So it's really, it's not, there's no charge, just so I can repeat, there's no charge to join, right? You just go to your website.
Correct. But presently, the way it is, www.pwt.org, there's no charge to join. We're actually trying to maintain it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've been telling people I can't say it's going to be that way forever, so get in there while the getting's good. Of course, there are costs and things, you know, to maintain a website, administrating, and definitely costs to travel and do things. But right now, we're trying to avoid it being a cost to a physician. We know we always already have membership fees and licensure fees and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it may at some point be a minimal fee or something to join. Or we have had folks that when they see what we're doing, they've given, you know, before, and we're very thankful for that. So
mm-hmm.
we have had, I think, a special that was running, like if anyone gave $30 or more, they get a free PWT t-shirt. So
mm-hmm.
we offer that to anyone that's listening to your show if they join. We can just, you know, make that available for the next month from this show. And then they can get the t-shirt with a new updated logo. But it's one of those things where we think that what we do will speak for itself. And, you know, in kind, as we do things, you know, the money and things will come. But we just didn't want it to be an additional burden for physicians. And we wanted patients to be able to get other information as well about what's going on in healthcare, the importance of having, you know, a physician in your healthcare, what a physician is, and, you know, the things that are affecting your healthcare,
mm-hmm.
the things that are going out there. And just educating, empowering, enlightening, and just, you know, as a part of our mission plan, just encouraging everyone that we can work together to make healthcare better.
I think it's yeoman's work, and it's extremely important, and it's a counter voice to all the negative, you know, doctors are bad, healthcare is never going to be fixed. We can fix it. We just
right,
need to educate
exactly.
our patients. We have all the tools. I mean, I like to say this. The healthcare system cannot work without us as doctors and patients.
And if we get together, we can stop this. We can, like, end this whole drama. But we need to work together. That's the key. So in the minute that we have left, what's the best way for our listeners to reach you?
Awesome. So if you are a member, if you are a physician, first of all, you're on Facebook, definitely go ahead and join the group, Physicians Working Together. There'll be three questions that pop up when you want to do that. If you are not a physician, but you are wanting to be interested in what we're doing, you can definitely go to the website, www.thepwt.org, that's thepwt.org, and join. And you'll be basically tap right into what we're doing. Got some exciting things ahead, and love to have everyone listen to the call, join us, and stay abreast of what we're doing.
Thank you so much, Kim, for taking the time to be with me today and my listeners. I look forward to having you back. And thank you all for listening.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.